Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Thursday night meeting of Recovery Jam. Tonight, we are going to be doing the doctor's opinion. And I know Melissa did it Monday. I actually was not here, so I have no idea if I'm going to say the exact same thing she did, probably not, or something different. So if you heard it then and you're hearing it now, it'll probably be a bit different. The one thing we do not want anyone to do is to compare and to sit there and say, oh, this person's was better and that, or that one's was better. We're not into that. We might do it, she and I alone together, but we don't want you guys to do it. So in any case, here we are, doctor's opinion. But before we do, I wanted to just point out a couple quick things in the forwards. I'm going off script, but we're Roman numeral 13, XIII. It says, I'm just going to read the very beginning. We of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. I love that because it tells me kind of the mission statement of this book, to show us precisely how to recover. And who's the target audience? People who think they're hopeless. Or not just for people like, yeah, you know, I'd like to lose a couple pounds. It's like, my life sucks. I'm powerless and it's unmanageable. And then it's going to show us exactly what to do, just like as if I were a diabetic and this was a manual called How to Inject Insulin. So thank God, right? Thank God something or someone is going to tell me what to do. And in the forward to the second edition, listen to how cool this is. It says, since the original forward to this book was written, a wholesale miracle has taken place. A wholesale miracle. So that doesn't mean like a miracle for one. That means like a miracle for 118 can take place. A wholesale miracle, right? So that is what we are about. So I'm going to flip to the doctor's opinion. Now, just a little context. The book was written, the text was written before the doctor's opinion. The doctor's opinion is almost like a book review. That the purpose he was to just go and look and say, okay, are these guys credible or not? And it's like he's just giving his stamp of approval on it. And that's what this is about. It's really his view on the text to give it credibility. So let's dive in. Roman numeral 25, XXV. He starts a letter saying to whom it may concern, blah, blah, blah. And he says, okay, in late 1934, I attended a patient who I had come to regard as hopeless. Well, we all think hopeless is bad, but for people like us, hopeless is good. On page 17, the chapter, There Is a Solution, it starts out by saying, we know thousands of men and women who were once just as hopeless as Bill. Nearly all have recovered. There's a connection between knowing that we're hopeless and recovering. So if anyone's here, landed here for the first time and feels hopeless, awesome. We don't want to stay there, but we have to start there. And the doctor continues to say, okay, in the course of his third treatment, he got ideas, certain ideas concerning a possible means of recovery. Well, what are those ideas, right? What did this dude do to recover? And it's real succinct on page 98. Burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition, so here's the program in a nutshell, is that he trust in God and clean house. What does it mean to trust in God? How do we trust in God if we don't want to? We will talk about that in depth when we get to We Agnostics. And if any of you have nothing to do this weekend. Melissa and I are talking a total of 8.5 hours over the weekend, and a huge chunk of that is devoted to how to find God. So stay tuned. We will post that in the chat. So trust God and clean house. That means basically we look over our lives. If we've stolen $50, we pay it back. If we've done damage in our families, we pay it back. We trust God and we clean house. And then it says, they must do likewise with still others, working with others. Then we carry this message of trusting God, cleaning house, and helping others to others. And then this dude just recovered. Did that and he recovered. So we're going to flip the page. I'm not going to cover everything because we don't have enough time. I'm just going to touch on something, the bottom of page 26. It talks about we have an allergy, and then we'll talk a little bit about why that's a good start, but it's not enough, right? I have an allergy to cats. If I go near a cat, I'll have an asthma attack. You know what? I just don't go near cats, so it's irrelevant. But yet, if someone says, I have an allergy to sugar, then the solution would be the same as my solution to my cat allergy. Well, then just don't have sugar. But we can't do that. So if we can't do that, then yes, there may be an allergy component, but that's not the main problem. If I kept going into pet stores every day and then ending up in the hospital wheezing, you'd say, Janet, you're insane. But yet that's how we were. The very things that made us break out instead of in hives or asthma attacks, but made us break out in, you know, overweight or for people like me, bulimics, head in the toilet bowl, we couldn't stop. So it's an allergy, but it's more than an allergy. They say at the bottom of 26, we favor hospitalization for the alcoholic who is very jittery or befogged. More often than not, it's imperative that a man's brain be cleared before he is approached, as he then has a better chance of understanding and accepting what we have to offer. I'm going to veer off into the realm of opinion now. So I'm going to qualify this as opinion. There are people who are, you know, smarter than me, who seem to think that that before someone can start working the steps, can be sponsored, they need to get X number of days or hours abstinent, 2 days a week, whatever. I've heard of a group that you had to be abstinent 30 days before you could work the steps. What they're talking about here is that an alcoholic is like, it's a drug that they actually can't understand it. That if you go and you explain to them, trust God and clean house, they'll hear like, wah, 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 wah. They can't process it physically because of the alcohol. So they need to be detoxed. But if we think of the founders of this program, Bill Wilson, when Ebby came to visit him, Bill was planning on drinking with Ebby. He didn't, you know, Ebby didn't say, you know, guy, clean yourself up for 2 days and then we'll meet. Dr. Bob, he, I believe, was drunk or was planning on getting drunk when he had his first meeting with Bill Wilson, because he made his wife promise she wouldn't keep him there more than 15 minutes. So the way that Melissa and I have thought about a hospitalization is a little different. It's that, while you're working the steps, you kind of consider that you're in rehab, that you're in a hospital. So that means you don't start salsa dance lessons. It means, you know, we don't go out to eat much. We keep our life focused on recovery. You know, we go to work, we take care of our children, our family obligations, we take care of our hygiene, you know, enough exercise to stay healthy. Don't want any exercise bulimics to run with that. Oh, run with that one. Get it? So But again, I personally would not tell someone go out and get 48 hours for the simple reason that I couldn't generally do it. If I'm powerless over food, how am I supposed to get the power to stay away? Now, some people may have willpower that can get them through 48 hours. I couldn't. Sometimes I couldn't make it to lunch. So again, my opinion, people wiser than I am might say something different. I've resigned from the debating society. I don't need to fight anyone, just throwing it out there. Okay, we are going to Roman numeral 27. And he says, many years ago, we're smart. We have all these modern standards, a scientific approach, but we're not well equipped to apply the powers of good that lie outside our synthetic knowledge. Of course, you can't put God in a syringe. And so he says, okay, one of the leading contributors to this book came to the hospital, and while here, he acquired some ideas which he put into practical application at once, even while he was in the hospital. And we talk about the minister's son, how he learned about recovery from a fellow patient in the insane asylum. So here, this tells us, though, we have to do what we know. Someone who's hospitalized and just starting out probably doesn't know a whole lot, but they know a little. So we do what we know. A friend of mine who was in AA said, any alcoholic who comes around can stop lying and stop stealing. We can all stop lying and stop stealing right away, and we can all do the dishes. We can all stop gossiping. There are things we can do. And then he has a whole nice paragraph there. Jen, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Can you read the paragraph that starts later, please?
Sure. Hi, I'm Jen, recovered compulsive overeater. Later, he requested the privilege of being allowed to tell his story to other patients here, and with some misgiving, we consented. The cases we have followed through have been most interesting. In fact, many of them are amazing. The unselfishness of these men, as we have come to know them, the entire absence of profit motive, and their community spirit is indeed inspiring to one who has labored long and wearily in this alcoholic field. They believe in themselves, and still more in the power which pulls chronic alcoholics back from the gates of death.
So many cool things in there. I've lots circled. A privilege to tell our stories. If we're feeling like this is a burden to do this work of helping others. Now, sometimes it is, right? We all have days where like, oh, can I just, you know, veg out and watch Netflix? But generally, it's a privilege to do this work. And look at the words they use. It's amazing. I looked up that word. It means unexpected in a good way. Unselfishness of these men. We can start practicing unselfishness. Entire absence of profit motives. That means we don't learn how to recover and then hang up a shingle that says eating disorders counselor, $100 an hour. We do it for free. Community spirit, we don't do it alone. And we inspire others. And what do we believe? We believe in ourselves. Like, wow, you know, okay, I can survive in this planet. But more in the power, capital P, which pulls chronic alcoholics back from the gates of death. This is one of these times I wish I had artistic talent because I could see it in my head. Someone, can you just see it like a woman walking toward a gate that has like skull and crossbones on the top, like scared, and then just like the hand of God pulling her backwards. If there's any artists here, you have my permission to draw that. But I can just picture it in my head, like we are pulled back from the gates of death, pulled back by a loving God. Okay. The next page, 28, it talks about frothy emotional appeal seldom suffices. The message which can interest and hold these alcoholic people must have depth and weight. In nearly all cases, their ideals must be grounded in a power greater than themselves if they are to recreate their lives. Okay, depth and weight, what does that mean? So I'm thinking, well, where does it really talk about that? And it's on page 45, it tells us what our problem is and then the depth and weight solution. Lack of power, that was our dilemma, right? I couldn't stick to a food plan. I couldn't run my life. I had no power. And then they say, well, that's, we had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves. Obviously, but where and how were we to find this power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object, so its numero uno purpose, is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. And in that same paragraph, they talk about God. That has depth and weight, that the creator who flung the stars in the sky cares about me enough to come into my life and remove my food obsession. That has depth and weight. More than, you have such a pretty face, if you would only lose X number of pounds. Okay, and then it says, we're to recreate our lives. We're not gonna get a little better. We become like new creation. End of the next paragraph. Again, they reiterate, nothing has contributed more to the rehabilitation of these men than the altruistic movement now growing up among them. Again, on page 20, it says, our very lives as ex-problem drinkers depends upon our constant thought of others and how we can help meet their needs. So if you're not through the steps yet and you can't, you know, help take someone through the steps, you can think of others. Everyone has others in their life. What needs do they have and how can I help meet them? And then they give us a little why. Now in the big book, they don't really talk about why we became alcoholic a lot. They don't spend a lot of time with it, but the doctor, you know, he's a doctor, so he's gotta be a little scientific so people take him seriously. So he's like, okay, they drink, we binge because we like the effect produced by alcohol. Okay, what's the effect? In the next, in chapter two, I think it's page, I don't remember what page. It's in, there is a solution. It talks about, we have two choices. We can go on to the bitter end, blotting out our intolerable situation as best we can, or we can accept spiritual help. Before we know about spiritual help, we do a lot of blotting out. Why? Last line there, it says, we are restless, irritable, and discontented. Isn't it discontent? Anyway, we're discontented and discontent unless we can again experience the sense of ease and comfort which comes at once by taking a few drinks. Oh, we are people who do not like to be uncomfortable. But that's one of the things we have to learn. We have to learn how to live with discomfort. And I know for me, I really learned that in the fourth step by doing the fear inventories, because the root of my fears is if this happens, I will be uncomfortable. And we have to learn to live with discomfort. It's not easy, but we have to. And drinking, or for us binging, it says there's a payoff. We get a sense of ease and comfort. Now it's a crazy one. It's as if I'm, if I've got a headache and I don't want to feel it, so I break my own leg. But that's what we do. You know, of course we need to be restored to sanity because we are not sane. And then what happens? We binge. And we go through the stages of a spree where we're remorseful have a resolution not to do it again, and it's repeated over and over. We talk about that. They go explain that more on the next page. But now here is probably when people call me and ask me my favorite part of the doctor's opinion. It says it's repeated over and over. And unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there's very little hope of his recovery. Well, first, like, what is a psychic change? Like, who cares and why do we want it? Page 25 is one definition where it says, the great fact is just this and nothing less. We've had deep and effective spiritual experiences, a psychic change, and this is what it does. It revolutionizes our whole attitude toward life, toward our fellows, and toward God's universe. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives, or into our hearts and lives, either way works, in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do by ourselves. So it says, we binge, we're remorseful, we say, I'm never going to do this again. And we do it over and over until we have a psychic change. Then, Jen, can you read the next paragraph that starts on the other hand?
Yes. Okay. On the other hand, and strange as this may seem to those who do not understand, once a psychic change has occurred, the very same person who seemed doomed, who had so many problems he despaired of ever solving them, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol, the only effort necessary being that required to follow a few simple rules.
Okay, this is staggering. So here's a guy, just like us, binges, remorseful, resolution not to do it again, over and over. And then he has a spiritual experience, a psychic change. And what happens? This guy who seemed doomed suddenly finds himself easily able to control it. It gets easy. All he has to do is follow a few simple rules. And those are the principles of this program. At one time, Karen M. Just went through the book and made a list of all the principles in this program. And they are on our website, recoveryjam.com/other resources. And it says something like principles by Karen M. So this guy read Karen's list, but he read it in the book or read it somewhere. And he started practicing these principles and he was fine. So I am continuing on Roman numeral 29, XXIX, and the doctor continues to say, men have cried out to me in sincere and despairing appeal. Doctor, I cannot go on like this. I have everything to live for. I must stop, but I cannot. You must help me. Please, guys, don't make the mistake that a bunch of people made with me my first 6 years in OA. Because I didn't have the power to stop, they thought I didn't have the desire to stop. I wanted to stop more than anything. I didn't have the power. So the doctor experienced the same thing. People saying, I must stop, but I cannot. And if we go to the regular text, page 24, it tells us at the top of the page, at a certain point in the drinking of every alcoholic, he passes into a state where the most powerful desire to stop drinking is of absolutely no avail. So we can have a strong desire to stop, but not have the power. And that makes sense, right? You think about another illness, cancer. You know, someone says, I have cancer. I really want my cancer cells to stop multiplying. Is someone going to say to them, you know, you must not really want it, because if you did, you would make your cancer cells stop multiplying. So no, our problem isn't lack of desire. It's lack of power. And again, the doctor continues by saying, one feels that something more than human power is needed to produce the essential psychic change. A miracle, a wholesale miracle. And very interesting, the bottom of that page, we're on Roman numeral 29. He's saying, yeah, it's not a problem of mental control. And now he's not talking about a guy who's drinking because he's restless, irritable, and discontent and needs ease and comfort. He's talking about a guy where everything's going great and he goes out and he binges. He drinks, he binges, wrecks everything. So sometimes once the illness gets hold of us, we're binging because the illness just says, I feel like making you binge today. Remember Bill Wilson said, alcohol was my master. It's not because things are bad. It's not because things are good and I'm trying to self-sabotage it. It's because food was my master. So when the illness said, yeah, Janet, you're going to binge today. And I said, no, I'm not. I was an army of one fighting an army of 1,000. Guess who won? Never me. They continue and they go back to talking about being remorseful and making many resolutions, but never a decision. I'm on page 30, where he's talking about the different types of alcoholics. And he says, okay, there's the psychopaths who are emotionally unstable. We're all familiar with this type. They're always going on the wagon for keeps. They are over remorseful and make many resolutions, but never a decision. What does that mean? So remorseful, that means I feel badly. Making a resolution is I won't do whatever, or I will do whatever, but a decision. Well, I mean, it depends really what my decision is. But where in the steps do we hear that word decision? Step 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. So I can say I won't binge, but remember, I'm an army of one. If I make a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God and he's going to protect me, well, he's an army of, you know, a gazillion. So I'm okay. But remember, if I want to do that, then I have to live life on God's terms, not on my terms, which means I have to start practicing unselfishness, honesty, helping other people and the other spiritual principles. Not perfectly, but that has to be kind of my life mission statement, to live that way. So continuing on, let's see, what I'm gonna say. At the bottom of the page, it says, the only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. This immediately precipitates us into a seething cauldron of debate. So I'm gonna tread really lightly here because people can have like whole long discussions on what abstinence means, what entire abstinence means, and we've resigned from the debating society. So I will just say that that is something each person can work out with a sponsor. Some sponsors say you have to go see a nutritionist. Some say, here's the Dignity of Choice pamphlet, pick one. The only thing I will say that I personally feel strongly about is that we are not doctors, so we should not be telling anybody to take or not take medication. Like, that is not my place to tell somebody, you know, oh, if you work these steps, you should be able to go off your medication. But as far as abstinence, I know that the Connecticut Intergroup recently put on a workshop about abstinence, and they had some people who were in how and some people who, had this kind of food plan, like a really tight one, and then someone who had a really loose one. And just, so this is something for me, when I got abstinence, no one was talking about like making lists of like red, yellow, green light foods. I was just told to get a food plan, and it boiled down to honesty, that if there was something I knew triggered me that I couldn't have, then I just wouldn't have it. It's about honesty. So above all, you know, we could have the most perfect food plan if we're not, I mean, and all our bodies are different. So what I may react to, you may not react to, but it's, you know, above everything, it's about being honest. And what I tell my sponsees is, okay, we'll do it this way till you're through the steps, which is generally 2 to 3 months. And then after that, it's really between you and God. I'm a resource. But for the first few months, you know, we'll be a little on the strict side. After that, you know, up to you and God. So all I'm going to say on that. We're going back to ending on a real hopeful note. On Roman numeral 31, the doctor talks about someone he knew who was hopeless. Says he frankly admitted and believed that for him there was no hope. He was hopeless. Remember, for us, that's good. He accepted the plan outlined in this book. He was willing to go to any length. 1 year later, he called to see me, and I experienced a very strange sensation. I knew the man by name and partly recognized his features, but there all resemblance ended. From a trembling, despairing, nervous wreck had emerged a man brimming over with self-reliance and contentment, a transformation, a caterpillar becoming a butterfly, total transformation. Then he says, a long time has passed with no return to alcohol, because recovery can be permanent. It is possible to never binge again. And he talks about another guy, same thing. A patient decided he was hopeless. He hid in a deserted barn, determined to die. Then he was rescued by a searching party. Remember how we talk about that God launches search and rescue parties for us, and that our job is to recover and be part of God's search and rescue missions to other compulsive eaters, to other addicts. This guy had a literal search and rescue program. That's what we're supposed to do for each other. We're supposed to help each other. And then the guy was desperate, and he didn't think it would work because nothing ever did. But he became sold on the ideas contained in this book, top of Roman numeral 32. It was presented to him. So what do we need? Again, love. It was love that caused people to go out in a search and rescue party for this man. And then good information. Those are the two ingredients that set someone up for success. And he worked this program, and when the doctor wrote this, he'd been sober for many years. And then the doctor's last piece of advice: I earnestly advise every alcoholic to read this book through. So read it and do it. And though perhaps he came to scoff, he may remain to pray. So we shouldn't write off scoffers. We shouldn't write off the people who hear what we're doing and just kind of roll their eyes. At least they're listening. And, you know, we're all scoffers when we start, right? Because we think we know better. It's okay. He came to scoff, but the hope is he may remain to pray. Why is that the last thing the doctor says? He may, you know, here's a man of science. His last thing is pray. That's his last piece of advice, pray. Because prayer activates the miracle. Prayer is how we get the miracle going. So stick around, because in coming weeks, we are going to just delve into how to have a miracle.